17 minutes before the hour. Hey, it's time for this week's Message in the Bottle. Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor, in studio. Hello, sir.
Good evening. It's still afternoon, but it feels like evening.
It does.
I happily heard you talking about how the days are going to start to get longer soon. That's like the best.
Please. I enjoyed your homage to Counting Crows.
Oh, that, yeah.
In the newsletter.
You know, it's really funny. For those who don't know, I quoted Long December in my newsletter. And I was in an a cappella group in college because, of course, I was.
that was before the beard, right?
I had a goatee.
Oh.
To look older, because I started to understand the chin problem, or lack of chinny. And
what was the name of your a cappella group?
Okay, so it was the Buffers. Right, I know. I knew we were going to get into it because Hamilton's colors are buff and blue, because of course they are.
Yes,
you know, we could just keep going on that track. But hey, there's a point to this, and then we'll talk about wine. But I was the music director, and I entered college actually as a composer, not as a singer. I've always liked writing music and arranging music and the exploration thereof. And so I arranged Long December for myself for my senior solo, and we recorded it officially in a studio, but the tapes got lost because the studio owner, I think, spent a lot more time doing cocaine than doing anything else in life. There exists a fairly decent live version. I ran through like all the lyrics in my head, like, well, how I can't use anything. Because it's a very depressing song.
It is, yes.
I mean, everything they sing is depressing, so whatever. But it wooed my wife well, so I went with it.
Because she believes.
She believes.
Maybe this year will be better.
She believes that the smell of hospitals in winter... And the feeling that it's all a lot of oysters and no pearls. See, I can do this for days. That and Princess Bride. Cool. So anyway, we are in a long December, and it's a long December kind of because we have that extra week of holiday shopping that we didn't really have last year, I guess, people tell me. It's all a blur to me. Being in retail, the last 6 weeks of, you know, right before Christmas are just like silly, odd things that that try the soul. But in a good way, because it's like, I actually like it because it's when I see all like my favorite customers that, you know, make their trips in from Madawaska or wherever, like their annual trip, or a lot of my Canadian friends come down. It's a nice time of year. So we're talking, we're wrapping things up basically as we come to the year's end. And we'll talk about the rest of the Southern Hemisphere, South Africa today, Australia, New Zealand. And then we'll talk some bubblies and stuff like that, of course, before we get to the year's end. Today, like I said, South Africa. So South Africa is really, really interesting. Why is it really interesting? It's old rocks and old settlement, but to us in America, it's very unknown. It takes a long time to get there by plane, so not a lot of folks have visited it. The regime that controlled Africa, as we'll chat about in a couple of minutes, really made it very, very difficult for export or anything like that. And then the initial efforts at export were really mediocre. So it has only been in the last decade plus that we're really starting to see a diversity of offerings from South Africa that have interested enough of us that now we can talk about it with some clarity and focus. But what do I mean by old rock? So this is the, because of tectonics and geology, which is a thing to anyone who's doubting, especially those in Alaska. Science is real, and those in Alaska just got a bitter taste of tectonics the other day. So that they happen, but so South Africa is geologically the oldest wine growing region in terms of exposed rocks. So it's tremendously weathered. Folded, so the right around the Cape where we're talking about all these grapes being grown and the things that sort of the geological elements that trap the weather and make it such a nice wine growing region, there are these folded up rocks. And if you look at a cross section, it's like you took like a piece of paper and fanned it. It's just one plate that pushed up another thing, and it's just all, it's this amazing escarpment. It's fantastic. Check it out on your local Google anytime you have a moment. And so, of course, naturally, because of all this weathering, I mean, not only are we talking about interesting places to plant vines, but of course, what is South Africa really known for, right? Diamonds? Well, they got exposed because of all this weathering. And then these are ancient rocks with magnificent pressure, and that created these diamonds, and then eventually they got exposed. Fossils, you see a tremendous fossil record from this area. So it's a very, very interesting area that's obviously, of course, like I said, been kind of closed off politically for quite a while. But you see, you know, granite, sandstone, shale in all these places, and just a wonderful little mix. And so wine growers love it. Love it. It's just huge. It's biodiversity. It's wonderful. It's the vines are strained where they need to be, and everything else is lush and fertile. It's like gorgeous. Obviously you sort of need to touch on the political, part of South Africa before we get into why it's happy and wonderful now. 80% of South Africa is of sub-Saharan ancestry, but as most of us of a certain age are aware, white people ran South Africa for a long time. That's not sub-Saharan ancestry. So how did those white people get there? Let's start to talk about that, because, you know, the Europeans, they went afar. And so the first contact by Europeans was in 1487, Portuguese explorer Bartholomew Dias. Spellings of his name vary a lot, but I'm sure you've heard of him. He led the first European voyage to actually specifically land there. In 1652, Cape Town, or what is now Cape Town, was founded. It is little surprise to anyone who has listened to this portion of downtown to notice that shortly after, the famous Groot Constantia Vineyard was planted. Cape Town vines. And that vineyard is still there. It is magnificent. It is out on a jut of rock. It is surrounded by the ocean, and it is still growing grapes that are drinkable by you today. In fact, I tried to get their wonderful dessert wine in. I failed. I apologize. But hopefully for next holiday season, they still make a dessert wine akin to the kind that they were drinking back in that time. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And then for a long time, nothing happened. The British happened because the British happened everywhere. But aside from that, you know, basically nothing happened. White people came, they kind of took over, and then the other white people came. And then things got really bad. and I suppose, you know, one of the formative things of my childhood, that I remember Nelson Mandela being released and not understanding why that was a big deal at the time. I guess I was just a couple of years too young and societally naive. But of course, so they were under a government a system of what's called apartheid, and it was a systematic oppression. How it relates to this is oppression of the wine industry. We'll leave the politics for another segment, but there was a cooperative essentially started first in 1918, but essentially in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It's called the KWV. I try to pronounce it every year and I always fail magnificently, but we'll give it a go. Cooperative Wijnbouwers Vereniging van Zuid-Afrika. So basically it became this harsh system. I mean, you know, massive yields, all for maximum profit, state profit. There was absolutely no women involved whatsoever. It was this oppressive nonsense thing. So there was no interesting wines being grown. There was no export of these wines to anywhere interesting. And then, of course, in 1991, the National Party lost power. And things changed literally overnight. And by 1994, so just a couple years later, you had this influx of young winemakers realizing the potentials of it. And then foreign investment as well, which always helps. So now we have this incredible diversity of what we can try from South Africa, because there was some old vineyards planted there that they just kind of rehabilitated. Of course, you know, going back to the 1600s. Fortunately, the government didn't manage to ruin everything, because when they were planting in the very fertile areas. They were just, again, going for maximum yield. They weren't interested in these, you know, low yielding ancient vines up in the hillsides. They didn't want to bother with that. So they're still there. And now they're being taken advantage of. So the wine I brought in today is from Badenhorst. We've had wines from these guys before. It was founded by cousins, and I love the quote, so I always got to read it. The property is owned by the dynamic and good-looking cousins, Hein and Adi Badenhorst. I don't know who wrote that. Probably them.
I think it was Hein.
Hey, you know, it's like I tell people, like, I'm dubbing myself a philanthropist and hoping that the money to give away just follows. You know, if you, I don't know. I've heard worse ideas.
And let me be the one to call you dynamic and good-looking.
Hey, they say, thank you. See, I didn't even have to write that, but I am going to quote you. So their, how did they get into the industry? Their grandfather was the farm master at Gru Constantia, the famous vineyard that was planted back in 1659. For 40 years. So he taught them the business, and Hein first vinted at age 13. And they restored old property, 28 hectares of old bush vines, located in the Svartland, and we have their Chenin Blanc today. So a white wine, minerally gorgeous, absolutely delicious. It's a fruit night, by the way. So if you have a special bottle of wine, open it up. It's a good night to do it.
Mm. That's lovely.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like nectary. It's wonderful. But it's got that minerality and that nice acidity. So you can tell this was like planted in very good soil. excuse me. Before I run out of time, I did want to mention, so we're in December. Our tasting is the 20th from 5 to 7. And I wanted to thank everybody who came out for our wonderful Catena tasting last Friday, by the way. That was excellent. Great turnout and amazing wine. So if any of you unfortunately had to miss it, I will do my best to set up whenever they're available, meet and greets and tastes with the people who actually move and shake the wine industry. It's tough to get them up here sometimes, especially in winter, but sometimes they have no idea what it's like in winter up here, so they come anyway. We'll figure it out. So thank you all, and next week we will talk either Australia or New Zealand. I don't know. Whatever my druthers are, but it'll be fascinating, no doubt.
I have no doubt about that, and look, there will come a time, I just want you to know.
Yeah.
It may not be in our lifetime, but there will be a day when Eli Manning is not the Giants quarterback.
Oh, I think that's possible. You know, God, if he played for the Redskins, his leg would be broken by now. By the way, and this is, again, I'm not a political guy, blah, blah, blah. I am a political guy. But the fact that Colin Kaepernick does not have a job right now and they're mining the depths of
Sanchez.
I mean, are you kidding my life? Are you kidding my life? But there's no collusion?
No.
I just wanted to say that. And you're right. There will be a time when Eli won't be the... But, you know, it's not all his fault.
No, mostly.
Someday he'll find a booth to be, you know, a terrible commentator in.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday.